Brian, is this house haunted?
What are you talking about?
Well, I keep hearing this eerie, grisly-like voice, and then beers that were right there in the fridge suddenly disappear.
You think we have a ghost?
Well, yeah, in fact, I think he's sitting right next to you.
You guys are dicks.
Ah! Oh, God! There he is.
Beer.
Did you say beard?
Boo!
Ah!
Welcome, Jack and Jane O'Lanterns, to another creepy episode of Digital Noise right here on oneofus.net.
Jane O'Lanterns, have you been reading Jezebel.com or something?
I may have, but I figured, you know, since it is October, we'll just continue with the old Halloween theme.
Works for me. Sure.
This is the eeriest of eerie Blu-ray and DVD review podcasts.
Well, this is the one where, like, last week when we talked about lots of great horror movies you should totally check out, this week we'll talk about lots of ones you should completely avoid.
This is true. But we are edging out spooky shelf space for the title of Eeriest Blu-ray and DVD Review Podcast.
Sure. So, why not?
Awesome. Anywho.
Somewhere, Scott Weinberg says, I felt a disturbance in the force.
And then he just smokes like 5 cigarettes in a row, and everyone's fine. I am your host, Brian Salisbury. I am terribly sorry. And I am joined, as always, by my cohort, Christopher Lawrence Cox.
I am terribly sorry for Brian Salisbury.
And we are joined, as we are now infrequently, by Luke Mullen!
I'm sorry for both of these guys.
As well you should be.
Favorite curmudgeon.
You're the youngest of the... No, wait, you're like 2 weeks older than me, aren't you?
I am.
Okay.
Boom. Roasted.
Roasted.
Get there out goes, of his yard, Brian.
There goes that point entirely. But yeah, we are here to review the latest batch of DVDs and Blu-rays, and wanted to let you know before we get into that you can find this show, as well as all of our other content, on iTunes just by searching One of Us in the podcast section. Also wanted to let you know that the voting for the yearly podcast awards is going on.
Are they Irish podcast awards?
I don't really know, but perhaps if you're feeling generous and want to go over and give
Did
us...
Did you have Lucky Charms this morning? What
I may have. I may just have done that.
But yeah, you know, there are categories for things like entertainment, things like...
Best Kissing of the Blarney Stone?
Yes, Best Kissing of the Blarney Stone. There's bound to be a category in which you will see fit to nominate Digital Noise. And of course, our other shows, Inside the Locker for Best Sports Podcast, The Original Gentleman for Best... there's like
general.
One for general or culture podcasts. I mean, there's pretty much a place for each of our shows to fit. If you guys would be so kind as to pop over there once a day and vote for us, we would really appreciate it.
Now, they're still at the nomination phase, though, aren't they?
They are still at the nomination phase.
So you have to go over there now just to get us on the list.
Yes.
So it's more important than ever you go now, get us nominated, which you can only do once. But once they go into regular voting, and if we make it to any of those categories... Bigora, vote every day.
Yes, absolutely. And I also want to extend a special welcome to our interns that have just started working this week.
Hi, interns.
Hooray!
And they're already pumping out some kick-ass content. I'm very, very happy with what's going on there. And there's a lot more exciting stuff to come this week, but that's really not what this show is about. This show is about Blu-rays and U-rays. That's terrible. Don't ever use that. Cut that out.
What just happened?
I was trying to transition into talking and into cracking open...
The Letter Box.
You've got mail.
That's right, the letter box. Thank you, Torgo. Thank you for saving my terrible segue. I appreciate it.
I don't think...
Is Torgo that. One of our interns? I feel like we should make Torgo an intern.
Close enough.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, we do have a couple of questions submitted by you, our wonderful listeners, and this first one actually comes from one of our good friends, Mr. Miguel Puig. He says, Dear Digidudes, what do you guys do when something has been spoiled for you? Do you drink heavily till you forget, or do you just cry into a pillow and later get over it?
Are those the only two options?
Apparently so, according to Mr. Puig.
I mean, obviously it depends to some degree how much I give a shit about whatever it is that's been spoiled.
Sure.
Or whether or not I care. But generally speaking, like, if it's someone I know on my friends list, I will usually send them a direct message on Facebook saying, hey, can you do me a favor and please be careful about what you write with stuff?
Yeah.
Now, I have a friend who will get into arguments with anybody about spoilers, who thinks a week is the absolute maximum for anything after it's been released, TV or movies, and refuses to hear anything different about it, which is why he's no longer invited on any podcasts I do to talk about movies or television shows. Because it's like, hey, guess what? The rest of the world disagrees with you, which makes you the insane person.
Yeah, as it turns out, that is the rule of insanity. That's how it works.
Yeah.
I think the problem is that most people have that sort of, like, defined time limit on spoilers. Like, oh, that movie's been out for 2 years. It's like, okay, but if it's not a huge mega release that everybody saw it, is it really safe for you to assume that every... Here's my thing with spoilers. I don't think there's a statute of limitations. I think what it is that it's how ingrained in pop culture is that thing. For example, Darth Vader being Luke Skywalker's dad is such a part of pop culture. It's been replicated and imitated and parodied in so many different things that it's just kind of part of our, you know, universal language by now. It's not really a spoiler to say that. Now, if you spoil something from, you know, the finale of Breaking Bad today, because, like, oh, that's over a week ago, that's when I come to your house like Heisenberg. Well, I've already seen it, but in defense of those who haven't, I will come to your house like Heisenberg and do the things that Heisenberg does. And I won't even say what those are, because I'm not gonna spoil it.
You will be the one who knocks.
Exactly.
It's weird. Someone should come up with some sort of graph or a timeline thing, because I think there's, like, different rules as opposed to the degree of spoiler, where you post it. I mean, there are those things that, yes, like Star Wars, like, okay, everybody knows that. Everybody knows what happens at the Wrath of Khan. And if you don't, you probably are, like, 10 years old or something. You just haven't got a chance to see it.
In which case, I will not spoil it for you, 10-year-old.
That sucks that, like, that still happens, because our culture is so inundated with communication now and self-referencing and meta-referencing that you're going to get some stuff spoiled for you like that. But the fact is, there is a certain degree of politeness when it comes to, things like a TV show that just ended in the last couple years. Most people I personally know wait till stuff comes out on Netflix or DVD to watch shows. So you saying, well, you would have had time to watch it by now, like a week later? No, because a lot of people like to watch it in one, whoosh, just watch it all at once. Your system for watching things is not everybody else's system.
And I've read pundits who have been like, well, it's your responsibility and blah, 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 spoilers are your fault. And I'm like, okay, stop. First of all, if you're an internet pundit, it means that that's your job. It means that your job is to sit around and watch. I know, because I am one. And a lot of my job is to sit around and watch movies and watch TV shows. And yeah, I can catch up on stuff quicker than most people who have day jobs. So for me to sit, like, if I were this person, I won't mention any names, but if I were the person saying, oh, well, it's up to you, and if I spoil it, then, you know, you just didn't catch up fast enough, that's arrogant as fuck.
Yeah,
because it assumes that everybody has the exact same viewing schedule as you do.
You're more of a pun dick.
Yes, a pun dick. Exactly. Luke, you've been quiet. What's your position on spoilers?
I love them.
Lies and slander.
I'll be really honest. I honestly think spoilers fall into just kind of a general behavior situation, like a general politeness thing. And the problem is that social media is so ingrained in us and such a part of our culture now that sometimes we forget how public it is. Like, sometimes we forget that we're not just talking to, like, five of our friends. Because, you know, if the three of us are sitting here talking about the Breaking Bad finale, who gives a shit? We've all fucking seen it, and we know we've all seen it. Like, it's not a big deal. If there's somebody here, like, you know, in a live situation where we're actually talking to other people, and I realize that doesn't happen often these days, but when we do leave our homes and actually speak to other people face to face, you know, if there's somebody in the group that you don't know, or you don't know if they've seen the show, like, the polite thing to do would be, hey, have you seen, you know, are you caught up on Breaking Bad? Have you seen the finale of Breaking Bad? And then determine the rest of the conversation based off their answer.
Well, and here's the other thing,
too. And that just doesn't happen on social media.
That's true.
Like, that's a social contract. That's a no-brainer. to do that. There's a certain amount of politeness that comes with being face-to-face, as you said. But the problem is that what's happening on the internet is this is just an extension of hiding behind your keyboard, of people leaving obnoxious comments and stuff. It's people going like, oh, I don't care. What the fuck? I'm spoiled on there for some guy I never see. Yeah, if you were sitting there talking to him face-to-face, you'd probably feel differently about it. But because you can hide behind your keyboard, you're like, well, fuck it. I don't care. It's funny that I spoiled it for you.
Well, and we're talking about two different things, too, because, I mean, there's a mea culpa and the benefit of the doubt. Like, if you're just so excited about something, you happen to mention something and forget that somebody, I mean, like, that happens.
That does happen.
Nobody's calling you a dick for doing that.
We're talking about people who are setting out to spoil stuff.
But when that happens and your response is, oh, well, you should have seen it, instead of, oh, I'm really sorry, I didn't mean to do that, that's when you've become a dick.
Yeah.
Well, and to go back to the letter of the question, which was, what do you do? Not much. I mean, what do you do when someone is rude to you at any point? You'd be like, hey, man, you know, that was kind of rude.
Yeah.
But that's, like, the end of my, like...
Like I said, you send them a message and you say, look, man, you know, I just so you know, I didn't really appreciate that. I was looking forward to watching that. You ruined the end for me. So all I'm asking is you be more cautious in the future about this stuff.
Right,
and
sure.
If they respond by being snarky and asshole, saying I'll do this whenever I want, that's when you defriend them on whatever it says from
you. I mean, if they're going to be a dick to you about it, like, that's just kind of one of those things you need to let roll off your back.
Yeah. I had a situation recently where there was an image on a website, an article I was reading, and then on the right-hand side of, like, other articles to read was, like, shocking, you know, movie or TV character deaths. And the picture was of something that was happening in Breaking Bad just ahead of where I was. And it spoiled it for me. And I was crushed.
That was actually, there were stories about that on the net, about, like, what the fuck is that?
And I, you know what, to their credit, to Screen Crush's credit, I messaged them and I was like, hey, this is really spoilery. And Mike Sampson, who runs that site, was like, I'm sorry, what is the image? That is not the image we... Apparently, because they, you know, as Chris knows, and I know from formerly working at Spill, sometimes the corporate overlords make decisions, and they're terrible. And apparently, that banner image was a corporate decision, and they changed it immediately, and he felt terrible about spoiling it. So, that's what I'm talking about. Sometimes it happens. Sometimes it's completely by accident. It's how you respond to that situation that makes all the difference.
Just try not to yell about it when you're responding, or be rude yourself. Try and be nice about it. Most people respond nicely.
Yeah, Brian.
I was very polite. I was like, dude, hey, you might want to take this image down and spoil
it. Don't. Like I said, there are people who are probably going to do it again. So why do you want to keep them on your media feed? I've defriended a couple people who were that way. Or like, look, man, it's my thing. I'll do whatever I want. I was like, all right.
It's cool. I don't have to associate with you.
But I'm not going to read your feed because I don't want that stuff spoiled for me. So goodbye.
Precisely. Yeah. Well, our second question comes from John Goley, who at first I thought was maybe John Gotti and trying to hide his identity.
Goley.
And then I remembered that John Gotti is dead. So it might be the ghost of John Gotti.
Are you kidding? I'm on his Twitter account. He's constantly tweeting.
Dude spoils everything.
I know. He spoils everything.
John Goley asks, what are some of your favorite alternate endings to a movie? He said he saw the Die Hard with a Vengeance alternate ending and thought it was badass. That is kind of a cool alternate ending.
What's the alternate ending?
He catches up with it. Simon Gruber escapes.
I suppose we should preface this with, we're going to spoil Die Hard with a Vengeance.
Okay. Yes, we're going to spoil Die Hard with a Vengeance. Cool. All right. We should do this for every movie. We talk about the alternate ending after the spoiler conversation.
Indeed, we
will. So, in the alternate ending, Simon Gruber escapes, and John McClane catches up with him in Europe at this bar and brings this device that has like a barrel on each end, and you don't know which end fires. And they basically play like a Russian roulette where he spins it and he ends up shooting him. And it's this kind of cool showdown between the two of them. I mean, I actually like the ending that's there, but I do kind of think, wow, that would have been a cool way for Gruber to go out. But anyway, Chris, I didn't actually tell you what mine is.
Yeah. What's your name?
Mine is. It's not a good alternate ending.
No, tell us, Brian.
It's not a good alternate ending
at all. First of
all,
the movie we're going to spoil is The Butterfly Effect.
The movie I'm going to spoil is The Butterfly Effect. So if you haven't seen The Butterfly Effect, this is the time to turn off your whatever you're listening to this on. Okay, so in the alternate ending of The Butterfly Effect, he goes all the way back to when he's in the womb and strangles himself with the umbilical cord.
If that's not the greatest alternate ending in the history of man, I don't know what
in
that's.
Other words, like, his life is such a disaster for everyone else that he goes back and gives himself an abortion. He aborts himself.
If only what Ashton Kutcher could actually do that.
come on.
You got aborted.
Poor
it's awesome. It's just the most bizarre eye-poppingly weird thing I think I've ever seen in terms of an alternate ending. So
in terms of an alternate ending, yeah. Yes. In terms of endings,
no.
Branded may still take the cake.
Branded or knowing, perhaps. but anyway, Chris, what is yours?
Actually, I'm going to leave the room really quickly because I have not seen The Abyss.
You've never seen The Abyss?
I've never seen The Abyss.
Oh, no. Like, literally, this is how we avoid spoilers.
I wasn't even... There's not going to be a lot of spoilers
It's like
here,
quiz show. He's like in a booth now.
We should play music or something.
We should use this as a booth. I never thought about
shouldn't
doing
Shouldn't there be dollars flashing up around him? He's got to grab as many as he can. You know,
Go for it.
So The Abyss, of course, like is one of those films that ends up very differently than how it starts, which is like deep water exploration movie by James Cameron, where they find extraterrestrial life basically, but under the ocean. And I love that movie. It's very long and it's not everybody's cup of tea, but for me, it's actually one of my favorite James Cameron films. The original ending, once again, spoiler, has, Ed Harris basically coming to terms with these aliens who are really freaked out about, humanity being a bunch of douchebags and are themselves thinking about kind of starting to take out humanity because they're a bunch of douchebags, which to be fair, we do probably kind of deserve.
Probably.
The original ending, the alternate ending, I actually think it was the original, if I'm not mistaken, and then they changed it after the fact, he actually goes on board their ship and they start like really reaming him about humanity's crimes. And they decide they're going to kill us all with mega tidal waves, which we actually get to see these mega tidal waves, which
mega wave from
mega
the sci-fi
tsunamis. But they decide after they read his love letter to his wife that they're going to save us, which means that the aliens have a very different sense of good and bad than most people do.
Sure.
But I like that ending because you get to see mega tsunamis.
I like mega tsunamis.
I do too.
Versus giant piranha.
Yes, versus giant piranha.
Yes.
So giant piranha comes out and eats Ed Harris's head.
Oh, you dicks. You guys are not cool.
And then Ed Harris turns into a Terminator. And no.
Well, what's your answer for this, Luke?
I'm actually a fan of Hannibal.
So we're going to
spoil Hannibal.
Hannibal.
I don't know if they actually shot this, but I know they at least talked about it because it's the ending in the book. So if you're familiar with the film ends like, you know, Starling handcuffs Lecter and he does some crazy like self-mutilation thing to get out of the handcuffs and like then he escapes and it's like kind of the traditional, all right, fine, you know, Lecter escaped, blah, blah, blah.
All right,
ending
fine.
The
Lecter's
book is brilliant. If you'll remember, like he's trying to, like brainwash Starling, like with all these psychotropic drugs and,
right,
and
right.
He's basically trying to make her believe that he is, that she is his long dead sister. And in the book, she is apparently strong enough to resist that, insinuation, but at the end, they become lovers and run off together.
Yeah, I knew that was
amazing.
A thing in the book.
Which is just mind blowing to me.
Yeah. That's pretty huge diversion from where the movie ended for sure.
Sure, yeah.
Okay. Well, alternately, I am going to go ahead and close the letterbox and move into
the reviews.
And wanted to remind you that you can purchase anything we talk about directly from our Amazon links we post right here on this page. Or if you need to buy anything from Amazon whatsoever, as long as you get there via our links, whatever you buy will support the site.
So do it.
So please do it.
Do it now. Do it.
Why don't you do it?
Do it.
All right, well, let's get this show on the road and start off with this. We're going to start at the end with This Is the End.
Yay.
Holy crap, this movie is hilarious.
This is the funniest movie that came out this year. It really is. And
it's the funniest thing I saw in theaters for sure.
The weirdest thing, I saw all these people bitching about Quentin Tarantino's list because of some of the movies that are on it. And yes, why he thought Lone Ranger was one of the best movies this year.
I thought Kick-Ass 2 was worse.
A sign of insanity. Yeah, and Kick-Ass 2 for that record. But people were putting This Is the End on that list. What, on the top 10? It'd be on my top 10 for the year.
Yeah, I'd find it hard to argue with.
It's so funny. I wished I had a pause button when I had originally saw it in the theater because there are points I was laughing so hard I missed huge sequences of dialogue because it was just... you can't stop. And sometimes it's snowballing where a sequence is just getting funnier and funnier. And what a great idea to have like all these actors who we see work a lot together anyway, just play themselves.
Sure.
Yeah.
You know, exaggerated versions of themselves.
Sure. I love that Michael Cera is a dick.
Yeah. They're always just either
mokehead.
Yeah. They're trying to slap Rihanna on the ass.
They're always either exaggerated versions of themselves or they're exactly opposite of what we pictured them to be. So. Thus adding to the humor.
Yeah.
But yeah, this story of this group of friends, dealing with the rapture.
Yeah. The actual holy Armageddon.
None of which seem to have a chance of hell of like God picking them to
none,
be
so to speak.
Is, like I said, one of the best movies you can see this year.
It is hilarious. And it got to the point where I was laughing so hard that I think I almost passed out. Like my head started to like seize up a bit. I was like, oh shit, I need to stop for a second.
I heard tell, and I wasn't there, unfortunately, but I heard tell that you actually gave this film a standing ovation at
when
the press screening.
See the ending of this film and you know my history with terrible 90s music, you will understand exactly why I gave this movie a standing ovation.
Speaking of alternate endings, and I'm not going to say because I don't want to spoil it for anybody who hasn't seen it yet, you know, by just discussing this alternate ending, it spoils the ending of the film. But suffice it to say, the one they were about to film of this movie before, apparently one of the writer's wives, just in passing, laughingly came and said, oh, y'all should do this. And they looked at each other and went, oh God, we totally have to do that. Get on the phone, call them quickly. But the original ending also sounded really funny. I'm kind of sad they didn't at least film it so we could see both versions.
Bastards.
Yeah.
But I mean, the biggest complaint I heard about this movie is that these characters are just playing themselves. Two things. One, this is a core of actors we've seen in a lot of comedies, both on TV and on the screen. And we've kind of gotten to know them in a weird way. There's a certain like fictive camaraderie that we feel toward them already because a lot of these movies are playing everyday Joes. So to me, it was like just the natural extension of that feeling. And plus, as you said, they're playing hyper exaggerated versions of themselves in most instances. So,
or the exact opposite.
Or the exact opposite of what
our expectations are.
Sure.
Based on the way that we know sometimes. I mean, like, you read about me, you see like, oh, they're America's sweetheart is Reese Witherspoon. And then you read she's a complete cunt to everyone whenever she's on the set, which you don't expect, right? Yeah. You expect her to be like, oh, thank you so much. Oh, you have a beautiful baby. But no, apparently she like is a terrible person. Hmm. Like, and there's lots of stories like that out there. Or you hear about people who are like Alan Rickman, who looks like he would probably be snobby and a dick. But you meet him, he's supposed to be the nicest, sweetest, most welcoming guy
ever. Would you like a macaroon?
And this plays with expectations. Well, the accusation that, oh, that's not really a movie, they're just playing themselves, is the dumbest accusation against a movie I may have yet come across. Yeah.
Wait till Channing Tatum's cameo and tell me if these guys are just playing themselves or if they're having a lot of fun with this really meta concept.
Well, I guess that argument just doesn't make sense to me because who, like, even if they are just playing themselves are funny. Like, what, it's a comedy. Like, I don't understand the problem here.
I love the concept here, and I am absolutely startled it took so long for someone to make this movie or some variation on it, quite frankly. I think the idea is so solid. That, I mean, I wish I had one of these guys' phone numbers right now, because I would call them and say,
I'm trying right now.
You need to make it. You need to have a movie about you guys making the sequel to This Is the End, where you're playing yourselves, but this time you're playing different hyperbolic versions of yourselves. Maybe this time Michael Cera is totally sweet and really nice and one of the main characters.
That would make my head explode.
And you know what I mean? And make it where they're filming it in Tokyo and there actually is a real kaiju attack and
Holy
the end
shit.
Of the world by giant monsters.
I love
you
it.
Tell me that wouldn't be the perfect sequel to this film.
I would watch the hell out of that.
Yeah. I'm in.
Yeah, let's make it happen now.
But definitely check this out.
Either way, so funny, goes lots of places you wouldn't expect. The sort of, you know, the Linorama thing with the whole, let's try a whole bunch of different takes of this and just save the funniest one. Some films it really is lame and like doesn't look like much effort was put in. Here, it really feels like everyone, I mean, it doesn't just feel, it is, everyone on the set are like best friends, and that energy makes this work so much better. They're so used to snapping off lines versus each other anyway, just in real life. You get that, and it comes across as these people, you know, they are who they are. They are really good friends. They are used to working with each other. It's that much funnier. Now, the second best thing to watching this movie is watching the bonus features, which are, as you would expect, pretty goddamn funny.
Well, you've already mentioned the alternate ending, which is pretty...
Well, which is not listed on
here. Oh, really?
No. That's what I said. That was never shot.
Oh, yeah, sad.
Sadly.
Face.
But there's audio commentary with directors Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg, and those guys are so funny together.
Totally.
There's a segment on them directing their friends, which is very funny. There's a lot of little mini features with basically the actors and them talking about the various aspects of it, but they're all not just featurettes. They're really funny with like alternate takes on things and them just goofing around. I mean, these are genuinely funny people. The one bit on here, where there's the guy who sticks his head in through the door and his head gets cut off. You know, just some random guy. There was like 80 different versions of that scene that are really funny. My favorite being where he's going like, they're like, why don't you go to George Clooney's house down the street? It's like, George Clooney is a dick. He kicked me out. Or like, George Clooney's head is mounted on a pole in the front of his house. That's all in Linorama, which is where you do see these alternate versions of all these scenes, and a lot of those are really funny if some of them don't go a little too long. And you remember in this film at one point they get together and make Pineapple Express 2, like a little fake trailer for lack of anything better to do since the whole cast is pretty much there. Well, they have the making of Pineapple Express 2 in here. You can see the original short that gave them this idea, which was Jay Baruchel and Seth Rogen versus the Apocalypse, which is a 10-minute short that's kind of funny. It's not as good as the movie, but, you know, it's definitely worth seeing. There's the expected gag reel, tons of deleted scenes. One thing you don't want to miss, because I almost skipped it. I thought it was just going to be the regular trailers, but This Is the Marketing has all these different shorts that promote the film, and the one is the marketing outtakes is the one you want to watch, where it's like all these them fucking around on a green screen for various different cable channels and all the different takes, and that's laugh out loud funny.
Nice.
Yeah.
This Is the End, something you should definitely pick up.
Agreed.
The one person I felt was missing from this cast of actors playing themselves in a very exaggerated way was Nicolas Cage. Luckily, Nicolas Cage also has a movie on our list this week, and it is The Croods.
Actually, he has two movies on the list.
He has two movies on this list, neither of which I have apparently seen. So, The Croods.
The Croods.
Caveman Nicolas Cage.
The Croods is the latest DreamWorks animation put out, distributed by 20th Century Fox. In addition to Cage, it's got Emma Stone, Ryan Reynolds, Catherine Keener, Clark Duke, and Cloris Leachman. Now, of course, The Croods is a caveman story with a bunch of, like, a cave people in a time not even mildly resembling anything that actually happened historically. Fortunately, this movie lets you know early on they're not trying in any way to suggest that this was even, so maybe not even our Earth.
Exists sort of in the same timeline as the Ice Age movies, where it's like, there's dinosaurs, now there's humans, now there's mammoths, now there's like, okay.
Even weirder than that. In fact. And the weird thing about this movie is that at first, I really didn't like it. When it first started going with this family who are dealing with Nicolas Cage as the really overprotective caveman father who won't let them ever leave the cave in the immediate vicinity.
Which is just such a stereotype I'm tired of in movies these days.
But the daughter, played by Emma Stone, is like, look, I want to go out and experience things and meet other people. There has to be other people out there. She doesn't want to have any of it. Of course, something happens that forces them out of the cave where they have to go on an adventure, which Nicolas Cage is kind of being, like I said, the overprotective dad the whole way, but lots of good stuff is happening to them, and as well as being attacked by these sort of dinosaurs that are combinations. They're like portmanteau dinosaurs, like mixtures between animals and dinosaurs.
I like it.
That are obviously fictional, and I like the fact that it goes so far. I mean, like, there's no mistaking the fact they never intended this to be reality, and sure. I like that more than what they did with Ice Age. As this goes along, it actually gets funnier and funnier. Because at first it really wasn't. It was like, here we go. This is an old story. Blah, 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 blah. But about 20 minutes in, I found myself starting to enjoy it. And by the end, I not only really liked this film for how funny it was, but I really liked its heart. I thought it actually found some cool things to say. It had the characters develop in a way that I found a little, you know, a little heartwarming.
A little tickle right here in the throat.
I actually liked this movie a lot, and I did not expect to. And maybe that's one of the reasons why I liked it as much as I did, because I went in with such low expectations. But really, it's got absolutely gorgeous animation on it. It's got great voice acting from everyone, and it's a fun story. I recommend it. Now, of course, you can get it in 3D if you're one of those weird people who actually spent money on a 3D television.
And by weird, right. We mean rich.
Rich equal weird, yes.
I don't know if I would even get a 3D TV if I was rich. I'm like,
Are you kidding? I'd get a 3D TV. I'd get a chair that massages my balls.
I would get one of those big, like, whole walls of TV like our friend George has.
Oh, God,
like, I don't need a 3D TV. I just need
a 3D projector.
I need a TV the size of, like, five refrigerators lined up.
Yeah, it is an entire wall of a house.
Yeah, and a big wall.
Fuck yeah.
That's what I want. But this, of course, still has lots of other extra features, like those interactive supplements where things pop up on it. There's a lot of things you expect to go with these type of animated features, most of which is directed towards kids.
Right on. Well, I'm glad to hear it was better than expected, because I did not have a lot of anticipation for it either, which is why I didn't see it. But moving on from the crudes, let's talk about The Wizard of Oz. Now, this is the, 950th anniversary of The Wizard of Oz?
It came out in
75th, I believe.
75th, yeah.
It came out in 1934.
We should look this up on our internet devices.
It's the 75th anniversary version, as Luke said, so that would make it...
1939, yep. 1939.
Oh, I got it right!
You got it right.
Yay, what do I win?
You win the ability to talk first about this particular release.
Isn't next year the
75th? Shh. This is not...
Yes. Jumping the gun a little.
Not the first Blu-ray release of this, for the record. They actually did put this out, last year, I believe, mm-hmm. originally on Blu-ray, but this is the first 3D version of it you can get. But they also, the 3D version comes with the regular Blu-ray on it as well. Of course, if you don't know what The Wizard of Oz is...
We can't help
you. Seriously? You don't know what The Wizard of Oz is? What the hell world are you living in?
Yeah, how do you not know what Wizard of Oz is?
If you haven't seen The Wizard of Oz, it doesn't matter how old it is, go see the fucking Wizard of Oz. It's one of the biggest, it's as big a cultural touchstone as Star Wars is, quite frankly. It's like that level of referenced and understood already, no brainer. Everyone dies at the end because...
Motherfucker.
What the shit, dude? Come on.
Nah, I'm kidding. Chris, depends on your interpretation.
Not cool, Chris.
There have been whole books written about how, nothing that happened in The Wizard of Oz is actually what you think happened. What really is going on symbolically is, and fuck all that.
What's really going on symbolically is, bitch don't know how good she has it. I'm with John Waters on this one. Why does she want to go home? Why would you ever want to go back to Dust Bowl, Kansas, and being a dirt poor dust farmer, then stay in the magical land of Oz? Did you see any other fucking crops on that farm?
I'm just saying.
Where you are essentially a queen of a magical land. Why would you not want to stay? And all of your family members are surrounding you in different forms. They're all playing the characters that are around you. So
I guess we're just going to spoil all of The Wizard of Oz.
Sorry.
That's one of those ones I'd say it's like Wrath of Khan or Star Wars. You're like, look, seriously? It's
at this point,
of the biggest cultural touchdowns there is. You know, top five.
yeah, definitely.
Anyway, what were you saying?
The funny thing is, all the new Wizard of Oz stuff that's coming out now, there's some, three new television series coming out based on it, all suppose that Dorothy went back and turned into the tyrannical leader.
That I actually like.
I actually like that a lot. But regardless, this is being regarded as one of the best transfers to Blu-ray of almost any older film ever. It's been given top mark, absolute 100% marks on several different high def and analysis websites I've gone to, both on audio and video. It's absolutely gorgeous looking. And apparently, although I don't have a 3D TV, it's being said that apparently the conversion was a pretty long and complex, expensive project, which Warner Brothers initiated with high resolution 8K scanning of the original Technicolor camera negative, and apparently it looks terrific.
It does. I've seen it in IMAX 3D, and it looks fantastic.
Aww. I avoided it because I'm still like, why would you ever 3D convert old movies? But apparently I'm missing out.
It looks great. It really does. I was very impressed. They were very careful about how they did it. You know, it's not overdone by any means. They're not throwing stuff at the camera, but... Mm. But they they took everything, and so for some people who are like, how do you even do that? You take all of the elements in the frame, Stallone? And you create a depth map for I want this wheel to be at the very front, and then Dorothy's behind that, and then Annie Ann behind her, and the house behind that, and you kind of lay out, you know, on the Z axis where you want everything to fall, and then go in and reshade everything and make it look like it actually has depth that wasn't ever there to begin with.
Okay.
And it looks really, really good. They did an amazing job at, I'm sure, considerable expense. I wouldn't expect this type of 3D recreation to happen for something like Commando, but
you Wizard bite Bob, your tongue.
I would love for it to happen, but tongue. Nobody's going to spend that money.
That would be awesome.
All those bullets.
And I do
flying.
Just want to say that because they did go back and completely remaster everything, this is actually different than the original Blu-ray. It's a negligible differences, but it is a different transfer.
Now, this is a two-disc release with the one that's the regular Blu-ray, I believe, and the one that's the 3D Blu-ray. Is that correct, Luke?
Maybe. I haven't actually seen the Blu-ray release.
It's a two-disc release. They put out a five-disc collector's edition, which has a third Blu-ray disc loaded with previously released special features from the 2009, and a fifth disc, a DVD, which has a six-hour MGM documentary. That being said, this has a brand new Making of Wizard of Oz, which is 69 minutes, and then a lot of previous content that you had on previous things. I mean, this is, unless you're like a crazy, insane Wizard of Oz
that's
fan.
Probably not.
This is, yeah, I don't need to buy a five disc collection. This has actually got most of what you're really going
to
need.
Yeah. Yeah. To get you out of the woods.
To get you.
And into the light.
Oh, God.
I'll just move on. That's fine.
You know what? You just go ahead down that yellow brick road. We'll catch up with you later, okay? Have fun.
Oh, you coward. Anyway, we're going to move on to Chasing Ice. Which I assume is about the crystal meth trade.
I thought it was a Chasing Amy sequel.
Wouldn't that have
been... Chasing Ice Cube?
If it was somebody else making it, I'd say Ice-T. Yes, a Chasing Amy sequel. Yeah. At this point, I don't want to see Kevin Smith make anything. Aww. That's me. Sorry.
It's about trying to get Ice-T to sign on to another season of SVU.
It is not.
Is it not? Okay.
That would be not as interesting either. But no, actually...
You say.
I do. I firmly say. But Chasing Ice is actually a 2012 documentary film that was nominated for Best Foreign Film, if I'm not mistaken, in the Oscars from 2012. But it's about a photographer named James Balog, not Balrog, but Balog, who apparently is being considered much in the same circles as the great Ansel Adams, as one of the greatest American photographers alive. And he started this thing called the Extreme Ice Survey in order to bring home the effects of climate change so he could actually show people. Like, the thing is, it's one thing to be told facts about climate change. It's another thing to have unmissable, beautiful-looking proof watching the glaciers over the space of several years.
That the Republican Party can still deny.
Watching them just disintegrate down to nothing. I mean, this guy set up cameras all over, you know, various places around big glaciers around the world. And like, you know, that was hard as shit to do in the first place. It's like really absolute, as cold as it gets temperatures. And he has him taking a picture like every, I think it was like once a day or something like that.
Jesus.
And you watch these things go and you watch these glaciers that are the size of like, a castle come down to the size of like a small village in the space of a few years. And it's like, and you know, it even goes so far as to say, okay, here's now that you've seen that, some people still say, yeah, but there's other glaciers getting bigger. It's like, okay, you want to see the actual numbers on that? Like of like these, let's say there were 3,000 glaciers, 4 of them got slightly bigger, you know, about 1,000 of them, or about 3/4 of them have all but disappeared, and the rest of them decidedly got smaller. So, you tell me what's happening.
Yeah.
This is one of those, like, it's past being able to deny that something has gone horribly wrong, and it does it by using incredible photography and gorgeous cinematography.
I remember seeing clips from this at the Oscars, and just a slight correction, it was nominated for Best Song, actually.
Best Song? Really?
Yeah, it's the song Before My Time, which I remember, that's where I remember seeing this footage, is because Scarlett Johansson was singing it at the Oscars over the footage of the, the time-lapse photography.
No, you're right.
But yeah, it's, I really
which is a
am,
good song.
Yeah, I'm really interested in seeing this documentary because, you know, I'm kind of a sucker for time-lapse photography. Like I'll watch the Planet Earth stuff with my wife, and my favorite part is when they do like time lapse of the desert or the rainforest. So, and it's something like that with a social message to it, then I'm absolutely gonna watch that.
And it is beautiful. It's got great music all the way through it. It's just, it's very zen like just watching it. It's sort of a look at this part of the world that you never really see. And so well done. I was just glued to the screen for this one. It's only 74 minutes, so it's not gonna take up too much of your time. And you'll feel at the end, you'll wish there was more of it. So,
and you'll wish there were more polar bears.
Not if you're there with them. Polar bears are mean motherfuckers. You do not want to. They are not cute and cuddly, for the record.
Good to know.
This one time I fucked a polar bear, that thing was totally ungrateful.
And it kept trying to, like, make me shove a Coke bottle up. Anyway, don't worry about that.
Left a huge mess.
Right.
Yeah.
But what we're really not talking about is how climate change affects the mermaids. Oh, wait. That's a segue into our next release, which is The Little Mermaid.
You know, it's kind of a relief after the previous 6 or 7 Disney animated releases of some of their not as big films that were not quite, they were beautiful, but they weren't as beautiful as they probably could have been.
There were things to gripe about.
It was clear they had not done the amount of work they had on those as some previous ones. It was nice to see that when it comes to their big titles, they pull out all the stops even still, because The Little Mermaid, this new diamond edition of the 1989 film, which is probably one of their, it's got to be in their top 5 most popular films.
I would think.
Oh, yeah. Most popular, definitely.
It's
yeah.
gorgeous and sounds terrific. They really made this look as good as you probably possibly could at this point. And it's still a fun movie. I haven't seen this since it came out in the theater, and I always, I guess somewhere in my head, I'm like, eh, that's the one for girls.
No,
this
really
movie's
awesome.
Funny.
It's an awesome movie.
It really is an awesome movie. It was one of the best Disney villains of all.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
my
yeah.
God.
Ursula?
Yeah, she is terrific villain.
She's terrifying.
In fact,
she's like half Cthulhu, half lesbian.
It's odd. Yeah. It's odd how dark this even gets yeah. at the end with her final, definitely. Like, you know what? Ursula don't go down like that. Ursula's going to fuck your shit up. And mm-hmm. you're like, damn.
Yeah, it becomes like this giant. Yeah, I won't. I don't know if I could spoil Little Mermaid, but just see it.
I mean, you can say that we're going to spoil Little Mermaid, and then you can say whatever yeah, you want.
See, now I'm like hypersensitive about it because of that question.
I think as long as you announce to the, so the listeners can go away if they haven't seen it,
to some degree,
that's being polite about it.
To some degree, there's expectations that are not really a spoiler. Gee, the villain comes out at the end and is defeated because it's a Disney
yeah,
cartoon.
It's a Disney
so what
movie.
The fuck do you think? That's not a spoiler.
Yeah.
It's really specifics of how the plot turns that are spoilers for stuff like
and
that.
And it is dark, but I'm glad they didn't go as dark as the Hans Christian Andersen story, yeah. which is usually the case with Disney where I'm glad because
Hans Christian Andersen is like the H.P. Lovecraft of his time or something. As near as I can
He's
tell.
Like the H.P. Lovecraft for children.
for kids.
The whole thing about like when she gets her legs and whenever she takes a step, it feels like razor blades are cutting into her. What the fuck, dude?
That's just because her legs were asleep. She doesn't use them.
The funny thing I got out of this, though, that I did not get out of, like, you know, my previous watching when I was younger was, man, at the first 20 minutes, I was like, fuck Ariel. What a little self-absorbed cunt. I'm sorry. She's
oh
like, her
God.
Dad has put on this giant musical number for the whole
I think you have to
kingdom.
Say clam in this case, but anyway.
I just want right? to say, I'll be on board with this as long as we can agree that the same thing needs to be said of Dorothy and the Wizard of Oz.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But,
all right.
But yeah, she like puts on this big musical number and she misses it. Why? No real reason. Oh, fuck it. Oh, damn. Did I forget about that? You know what? You either need to be, you need to be on medication or something. Something's wrong with you. There's nowhere. You're
Christopher
dead.
Lawrence Cox advocating lithium since 2013.
You can get your prescription through me.
The Lithium Mermaid would have made a great sequel.
She needs to calm down. All she does is the opposite of what her dad says.
Instead of Under the Sea, it's Under the Influence.
I mean,
I would watch the shit out of that movie.
The smartest thing in this film is that point early on where he's just had it with her shit and goes and tears up basically her room, like breaks apart all her shit. And even he's like, oh crap, I can't believe I just did that. But I was like,
shit, that was
bitch kind of had it coming. I'm just going to tell you.
Dude.
Aren't they basically fish? Like, she's his young. She's lucky he didn't eat her.
I'm just saying we're lucky that Christopher Lawrence Cox is not reproducing anything.
It seems unlikely.
Not ready for
well,
children.
I tell you this, if I have a kid, they're going to come every time you see him, they'll be like, yes, sir.
Oh, Jesus. You know what?
Or else you'll break their toys. My God.
Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and agree with Luke on this one. Don't worry about reproducing for quite a while.
Well, you know, the thing is, like if your kid is really as horrible as Ariel is, they do need some tough love. I don't
know
if it's
I'm with you on tough love,
toys.
But come
maybe
on,
some
man.
Spanking, but you can't put that in a Disney film. Although it would have been really hot.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Wow, we are in a completely different territory now.
Ariel is
the Little Mermaid.
She is the hottest of all the Disney female lead characters, except possibly Jasmine.
Yeah, and Jasmine are like
Aladdin.
Neck and
They're
neck.
They're neck and neck, totally. But yeah, this is a lot of fun to watch. It's really funny. It comes, of course, with a whole bunch of extra features, including a whole stack of new HD bonus features on here. One of the things that made me laugh, like, is it includes the original DVD bonus features, which includes a look at the ride that almost was of The Little Mermaid, where they've got like a virtual tour through it and everything. But on the new features is the woman who voiced Ariel with her kids going on the actual ride that did in fact get made since that like previous, oh shit, I guess we're never going to have a Little Mermaid ride.
Now here's my question, and it's a question on everybody's mind right now who is screaming at their device on which they're listening to this. Did they or did they not remove the boner from the priest during the wedding scene? Do you not know about this?
Oh my god, you're not aware of this? No. Oh man, so at the end when they're on the boat,
we're going to spoil the boner scene from the Little Mermaid.
Okay, yeah, so the, you know, Ariel's, yeah, we're going to spoil, we've already said, we're going to spoil the boner.
We're going to be boner killers.
Ariel is marrying the prince, and there's a little bitty priest, like, maybe 3 feet tall priest that's marrying
a small
them.
Guy.
And they're doing like, they're, it's cut back and forth. So you see him and then you see Ariel and then you see him and you see the prince. And every time they cut back, like, dude is just pitching a tent, man. Like, there's no other way to say it. The front of his pants
you
continually
see it drop.
Grow in
like, you
a
see it
triangular
like
form.
Yeah, that's like, funny. You see it, like, drop from one height to another as he, like, bounces around. Well, it's like, come on, man.
If I'm not mistaken, that whole period of, like, you know, that period of Disney films, there's, like, a sex joke hidden in almost every single one
of them definitely.
From the animators. Like, I remember the famous one was the clouds and the Lion King spelling
out the flowers. Yeah.
Or Aladdin saying, take off your clothes. Yeah, I mean...
The genie
says okay, yeah. But that's the thing is like, I was just curious. I would suspect that if they also corrected the dildo shaped tower on the clamshell box of the Little Mermaid,
they just didn't use that art for the Blu-ray.
No, that they also might have gone back and removed the boner ridge.
I wouldn't put it past them, but I kind of hope it's still there.
Yeah, well, I hope
we'll have to find out.
His Eminence's. Prominence.
I was, this actually made me laugh even harder because I was watching the new, Robot Chicken the other day, which starts off with a thing with guys going, okay, I don't know what we're going to do here. We've got this beautiful model dressed up as a mermaid, but are we going to film porn or a coffee ad? And like, oh, I don't know. It's like, hey, pull your legs up over her head. And, you know, it's like a spread shot of a mermaid and like, oh, okay. And then basically something happens, crushes her, and she dies right after they took the picture. It's like, what are we going to do? We can't do porn. Hey, I got it. Just crop the picture. And it's the Starbucks
logo.
And
that was really clever.
Okay, right. I saw that literally right after I watched The Little Mermaid, and I laughed. I had to press pause. I was laughing so much.
Right on. Little Mermaid. Anything else we need to say about Little Mermaid
God, no, please get on.
It's a great film. It's a great version of it. Disney has done one of their better releases with this. Totally watch it. Grab a box of tissues and some lotion, put it on. Great stuff.
All right. That is terrible.
I really hate him.
We are going to move on to The Frozen Ground.
The other Nicolas Cage movie.
And there we are.
Which looks like they really thought this was going to get a big theatrical release.
Yeah, totally.
I mean, like, the way this was, like, at least the online marketing I remember before, it did not, in fact, get a big theatrical release. It looked like they were going to push it that way. And hell, you got Nicolas Cage playing a cop, chasing a serial killer, played by John Cusack, which is not a spoiler, by the way. They tell you that right from the get-go, that he is the killer. Based on a true story of a guy I never heard of, but holy shit, what a fucking monster piece of
shit. Prolific serial killer, like, in Alaska.
Yeah, like,
oh, yeah.
God, like something like 60 women or something like that. Like a ridiculous amount of women he like tortured, repeatedly raped, imprisoned, and then eventually murdered like game out in the wilds of Alaska. Piece of shit. And this has everything that should make it a really good movie, except... who the fuck wants to see John Cusack play a serial killer?
don't do it. Don't do it.
I will say there's a movie that may be coming to theaters soon. I can't even tell you the title of it, but John Cusack does that in a way that's very entertaining.
Not really a serial killer.
I guess he's not serial. He's more of a psychopath. But anyway, you were saying.
Is it entertaining in a, you know, that's the
I'm
way they
I'm pretty sure you saw it.
Did I?
At Fantastic Fest.
Oh, maybe I did.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But that's such a tiny little role for him.
Anyway.
But this is
that was him. The weirdest conversation our listeners ever had.
But you know, you've got Nicolas Cage as the cop and John Cusack as the serial killer. Hello, did you mix the casting sheet up?
Yeah. Just gonna switch those.
I know. I was like, no brainer. Switch the roles. And in fact, I suspect this probably would have gotten a theatrical release if they had in fact done that. Because I like the idea of Cusack hunting down a crazed Nicolas Cage. We all want to hunt down a crazed Nicolas
I just imagine Cage walked in the office and went, I don't want to play the bad guy. And they're just like, really? Are you sure? And he's just like, yeah, I want to play cop. And they're like, why are you talking like that?
Well, you know, I've gotten to the point with Nicolas Cage, I'd rather than see a performance like this, which is perfectly competent. There's nothing wrong with his performance in this movie. I would even go so far as to call it sturdy. I would rather see
him not good, mind you,
totally insane and ridiculous in another movie now.
Like the four posts of your grandmother's bed.
Give me Bad Lieutenant 2.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm like, I really like it when he goes totally just so bad ridiculous. It makes me laugh. He's one of the best people there is at giving a bad performance. I don't know what to tell you. He's terrific. So this movie ends up actually being sadly just a little bit dull is the problem.
Ugh.
It plays its hand too quickly of like, here's everything that's happening with the villain. We know all their details. And the rest is just waiting for the film to gradually get to the point where Nicolas Cage is capable. I mean, he knows from the beginning who it is. So there aren't a lot of surprises.
Not much tension in this script, I take it.
Yeah, most of it is following around the girl played by Vanessa Hudgens, Cindy Paulson, who was in real life, that was the name of the girl who survived and led the police to him. Of like, following her around while she regularly, he puts her somewhere safe, she gets bored, leaves, almost gets killed, he has to go get her again, put her somewhere safe, she gets bored, leaves. That's all this movie is that happening over and over again until you're like, you know what? I'm rooting for John Cusack to kill this bitch. it's frustrating and kind of dull, which is a shame because it should have been a good movie.
So close.
That's too bad.
Close. Well, I will say at the very end, there's a nice sort of like a thing that brings it home where they do a thing. They show you pictures of all the girls that they know for sure who they were, who were killed. There's lots. They couldn't identify the bodies. They were prostitutes and roamers. They're like drifters. They're like, we don't know. But like, yeah, of all these girls.
Chris, that sounds really morbid. I don't know that really brings the movie together.
Well, no, I mean, it like is one of those like, it makes it that much more creepy when the reality of the fact that this actually happened hits you in the face like that.
So from a movie that should have been good, but wasn't, to a movie that has no business fucking existing in the first place.
You've got
to
be talking about Fright Night 2.
I am talking about Fright Night 2.
Such a weird movie.
Let me just eliminate the facade immediately. It is not a sequel to anything. Nope. It is a failed script for the actual Fright Night remake that came out.
I think that's we're guessing on that.
I don't know what the... Okay, if you're going to call it 2... then that means that the events that happened in the first film had to have happened.
I would all say as well, one of the big appeals of Fright Night is that it takes place in suburbia.
Right.
That is just everyday, regular world.
Yep.
This takes place in Romania.
Where all of the vampires are.
And it therefore doesn't in any way, shape, or form resemble Fright Night, except that the characters have the same names as the characters.
That's what I'm saying. It's like, calling it a sequel would suggest that this happens in maybe after, or even that it's a prequel. But no, it's basically the same problem besetting Charlie Brewster, with Evil Ed, with the girl, with, you know, Jerry Dandridge. It's just basically trying it again in Romania and making Jerry Dandridge a female.
Yeah, which I will say is the one aspect of this I liked even a little bit, which is I really like the actress Jamie Murray, who's a regular on a lot of different TV shows right now. Like, she was really great on Warehouse 13, a number of other shows, and she's a super sexy lady. And seeing her here as the voluptuous, seductive female version of Jerry Dandridge, okay, that wasn't all bad.
No, it's an interesting enough idea. Yeah,
and there's some set decoration stuff in here I thought was kind of cool inside of her, like, castles and the various...
Yeah, no, it definitely has that.
And you are reaching for nice things to say about this.
Well, no, but there really was. There's this one point
Props department did an excellent job.
She's got a swimming pool filled with blood that the thing that trickles down into it is a girl hanging upside down with her neck slit where the blood comes out through, like a sculpture of that. And I was like, okay, that's actually pretty fucking cool and makes sense because she's supposed to be not Dracula in this case, but the Countess Elizabeth Bathory.
Which is
Dracula, according to the movie.
Okay.
Which is not actually
true. It's an interesting idea, but they needed to explain it better. Like, literally, there's a scholar who's like...
It's a tour guide.
Well, it's a tour guide. It's like, well, most people think that Dracula was a man, but actually he wasn't because of Elizabeth Bathory. And I'm like, your evidence can't be there was also Elizabeth Bathory.
Yeah.
But, like, people think Dracula was Vlad the Impaler, but in fact it was Elizabeth Bathory because she also existed.
And you're like, you know Dracula isn't a real person, right?
It's what the fuck are you talking about, you little Romanian weasel? I don't understand what you're saying.
I mean, they were both pretty bloody horrible people, but I would argue that Vlad was doing it, like, out of being crazy and trying to be, like, do something politically to help his kingdom stay together. And Elizabeth Bathory was just fucking bonkers.
Oh, yeah, she was just nuts
crazy.
Pants.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
I find the script in this movie is just so fucking painfully bad. You're watching this and characters will make decisions or they'll do things or they'll say things and you're just like, really? That's the best you could come up with? No second takes?
Okay. Let me also add here, and yes, I don't give a fuck. We're going to do spoilers on this one because you should never, ever watch this movie.
We're about to spoil Fright Night 2.
You should never, ever watch this movie.
You really shouldn't.
All right, so, like, they set up the rule, of course, like, in this, once you become a vampire, that's it. You're evil. You're evil as a vampire. And yet, at the end of the movie, depends on our main character getting vampirized and his brain not changing at all.
Yeah, it makes no fucking sense.
It makes absolutely no sense. There's so many aspects here as it gets in the last third that are like, you guys just did not give a fuck.
Yep.
Yeah.
That was a terrible film.
Which leads to us not giving a fuck about this movie.
No reason to give a fuck. Now, there's.
I do kind of like the Evil Ed character. Like, not paying homage, but like. If you take the Evil Ed from the original Fright Night and put him up against the Evil Ed from the Fright Night remake and Fright Night 2, he's a lot more like the Fright Night 2 Evil Ed, I feel.
Yeah, maybe so, but I was disappointed. I kept waiting the whole movie for him to go, "You're so cool, Brewster!"
Yes, that would have been awesome when we get that line.
And some of the things they try to do to be edgy and cool also make no sense. Like, there's a shot of Evil Ed getting burned by the cross on this Peter Vincent version's chest.
Which is really cool idea.
Yeah, it's like, okay,
that's
cool.
It's a tattoo, that's nice.
But then there's a shot from, I guess, would have to be inside his chest, where it looks like the cross is on cellophane and, like, hitting him in the face and crumpling. And I'm like,
what the
fuck is that?
Who put the camera inside a man's ribcage?
I'll tell you who. Eduardo Rodriguez, who is
that dude.
One of those guys who all he makes is crappy sequels. That's it. That's all he makes is crappy sequels.
That's his lot.
And I'm sure he gets paid handsomely for it.
You know what? Maybe he does, maybe he doesn't. But I was looking at his list of films and I was like, holy shit, every last one of these is fucking awful sequel to generally movies that weren't all that great in the first place.
Let me put it to you this way. I would rather watch one of the gay porns that actor Stephen Jeffries, who played the original Evil Ed, went on to make after his theatrical film career went down the tubes, then watch Fright Night 2 New Blood again.
Don't know if I'm going to go with you on that.
No, I'll watch Fright Night 2 again, but it's not good.
No, it is not good.
Such homophobes.
And if there was any... there's nothing like, God, I really hate the Peter Vincent guy more than anything in this movie, actually. He does not want to be there.
It didn't bother me.
He's just not really trying the whole thing.
No one is trying, Chris.
But more so than anyone else.
But I understand why it's more aggravating with Peter Vincent, because he's the one thing that could have potentially saved this movie.
They've gotten somebody who at least put some energy into it. But here he's supposed to be like a reality show type guy. And if you, for whatever reason, think that's cool, there's 11 minutes and 30 seconds of Fright Night webisodes showing
his
real show.
Why does this movie exist?
There's no reason for this movie to exist.
It's like, we would have done the remake like this. That's what this movie is. This is how we would have done it. It's like, yeah, I'm glad you didn't. I'm glad they went with the better script and the better actors.
It's unbelievable that the original sequel to Fright Night is actually much better than the sequel to the new Fright Night.
Yeah, no, that movie's decent. This movie is ass crack. So, yeah, I'm going to go ahead and say pass on that one.
Our pick to skip of the week.
Pick to skip. I need to make a jingle for that. Pick to skip. And moving on, we're going to talk about Dead Before Dawn.
Boy, a lot of competition with the pick to skip this week.
Oh, man.
This is not one of the best weeks for horror.
I couldn't even finish this one.
I almost turned it off. The only reason I didn't, because literally I had to go somewhere in about a half an hour, and there was 20 minutes left, so I couldn't really start anything new. And I was like, you know what? I'm just going to watch the rest
of
this.
You're just trapped?
Didn't this come out on the Chiller channel?
God only knows.
It certainly feels like something on Chiller, which like feels like is right now doing like early days of sci-fi type productions, sci-fi channel productions, where it's like, you guys have no clue what you're doing, right? But taking the young lead, Devin Bostick, who you might What's the
recognize.
Word? Recognize. I want to say recommend, but that's definitely not what I mean. You might recognize from Diary of a Wimpy Kid series as the older brother.
Oh, yeah. No, I wouldn't. No, I wouldn't recognize. No, yeah.
Unfortunately, I was forced to watch the first
one. I think I watched one of them, and I can't remember a damn thing about it.
But this is ostensibly a horror comedy.
You would think. Maybe.
The attempt here. The idea being is that Devin, playing a character named Casper, when he was a kid, he was in his father's occult store. Something happened that looks like his father got turned into a demon. We never really see much about it, but ultimately we know, flash years later, his father is dead. He's traumatized by it, has lived his whole life very nervous and on edge, afraid to approach the girl he really likes and tell her he likes her, very typical of this type of movie stuff. Afraid to go into his store, which is now run by his grandfather, played by Christopher Lloyd, who looks bored out of his mind.
I thought he looked on the verge of death.
Yeah, he
like oh, no. Every single scene, you're oh, just no. like, oh, Chris Lloyd, dude,
please don't die.
Don't do it,
this.
Man. Don't have this one be your last one.
But when he decides, okay, you know what? I'm going to take over. I'm going to man up and I'm going to run the store for a night so my grandfather can go and receive an award for best occult store or something
like
that.
Yeah, some bullshit.
Some bullshit they like thing like that. He goes in there, is told, do anything you want, just don't touch that skull up on the shelf with the jar under it.
Okay. Well, gee, I wonder, Chris, what does he do?
Naturally, I've got to touch
it. Well, the girl he likes comes into the store and he's got to impress her. So he touches it, smashes it. And as the group of not really friends, but friend-esque people who are there,
friend adjacent,
for whatever
people.
Reason, start supposing after a smash, oh, what if what happens is, everyone who we look at kills themselves? Yeah, and what if after they kill themselves, they turn into a demon? But a demon mixed with a zombie? Yeah, a Z-man. That's clever.
That sounds like something you don't want to get all over your shorts.
Oh, but see,
actual movie.
That's not
that we are reviewing.
It gets worse. Okay.
Oh, God.
What if they gave one of us a hickey, which they'll try to do, it makes it where we can be turned, too, and, like, kill ourselves if one of the other guys looks at us. Oh, and what if you make out with one of them? They become your slave, and it just goes on like that. And, of course, the demon, having no sense of humor, I guess, because none of this is funny, decides to make all this actually happen. So the rest of the movie is them running around, trying to keep from looking at people, which they can't. And the whole town turning into zombies and mainly CG-wise getting gored up
so
as
bad.
These kids try and follow the recipe in order, collect all the pieces of the recipe in order to reverse the demon decision. The worst thing about this film is, oh wait, I can't pick a single thing. I don't know.
The worst part is actually that it was, I don't know if they shot in or post-converted to, but they wanted this to be a 3D release.
Well, yeah, you can actually get it on 3D.
Does it have? Oh my god!
Yeah, there is a 3D release of this.
Oh god!
It's not the one that I have, and I would not watch it again to see what the 3D is like. But yeah, it doesn't look good at all. The acting is almost uniformly terrible throughout this whole thing. They want so hard for this to be funny, and they've got some good people who are in it. Like you said, Christopher Lloyd, Kevin MacDonald from Kids in the Hall is in this in a really ridiculously unfunny role. Like, I recognized almost everyone in this, all the kids. You're like, I've seen them in something, you know, some other teen movie. But nobody memorable enough for you to go, oh, I love that person, because you don't. it's not funny. It's not funny at all, and it's embarrassing. It's like the thing when the guy who comes to a party who thinks he's funny and is, like, being really loud and trying to entertain everyone, and it's just awful, and you kind of, like, oh, I gotta find an excuse to go smoke a cigarette. Get the fuck out of here. That's this movie, if it was that guy.
Absolutely.
This is absolutely a skip. I was really irritated because there's one point towards the end where there was one thing that actually made me laugh out loud. Like, the only thing that made me even so much as chuckle, this one thing. I was like, that's good!
And then it was over.
And then it got even worse, because I'm like, you know what, that makes the movie worse, that there's one thing out of the constant joke barrage that's terrible that actually is funny.
Well, this sounds like a skip all around, so...
It absolutely is.
Why don't we just go ahead and move on to the Amityville Horror Trilogy on Blu-ray, thanks to Scream Factory.
Hi-oh!
I love Scream Factory.
Right?
And although... No question, the Amityville Horror Trilogy is far from the best trilogy in the history of horror.
You bite your tongue.
No, he's
have
right.
Have you seen Amityville 3D?
Yes.
Have you seen Amityville 2 with the weird incest
you
shit?
You both bite your tongue.
Actually, I kind of like Amityville 2.
Amityville 2 has some creepy imagery.
Yeah.
But the thing that bothers me, well, I'm gonna run this down really quickly. Of course, everybody knows Amityville Horror. The Lutzes move into a house in Long Island. Uh-oh, it's haunted. Gotta get out of there.
What?
And, yeah. like, it was sold as a true story, which yeah. was a huge cultural meme at the time. Like, oh, yeah. my God. I mean, I saw this in the theater and read the book when I was a kid, believing this was all true, and it fucking terrified me. When you know it's not true, significantly less terrifying.
I don't know. I still think, as a haunted house movie, I still think it's pretty creepy.
It's not bad. It relies heavily on its audience having a certain degree of religious faith, to yeah. be sure, because the movie falls back constantly on this house hates God,
Christ. I don't feel like I needed to believe in God. I just had to know that there was some sort of evil in that house. Like, I don't think that evil would have cared what religion I was, but...
Well, maybe not that, but in the context of the film, like, the wife is very, very religious herself, played by Margot Kidder.
Yep, and James Brolin plays the dad. It's actually a great piece of casting.
It's a great casting. He is genuinely terrifying as the movie goes along.
Yeah.
The concept of these generally is like, at least with the first two, is the dad or one of the people in the house slowly gets possessed by the power of the house,
aha.
turns evil, and starts killing people.
That is my problem with the second one, is Burt Young is a dick long before they go into that house. But and, of course, it affects his children more.
Yeah, yeah.
But the fact that it was like, the thing I loved about the original is like, you have this really great family that moves in, and oh my God, what's happening to them? Before they even get to the home in two, you can tell this is a dysfunctional, fucked up family. So it's like, oh, the ghosts aren't even going to, the demons in the house aren't even going to have to try that hard.
No.
Be like, hey, kill people. Ah, it worked.
Well, I felt like the intent there was to trick audiences, to go, oh, it's going to be him, the dad. And it totally isn't even vaguely the dad.
Well, if they were trying to trick, why didn't they make him a nice guy?
That's because the trick is you're expecting it to be the dad because he's such a dick right off the bat. And it was the dad in the last one. And then it's not the dad at all. In fact,
maybe.
He's just a dick in general.
Could be.
Yeah. But there are aspects of the second one that I did like. I will say this. The first one is a really slow burn of a film. It takes a while for stuff to really start happening in it. And it works more than it doesn't. It's effectively chilling, especially in a 70s ghost movie sort of way. But the second one is like, okay, fuck all that. We got to get right to the action. And it almost immediately... Like, you're 20 minutes into that film and the same type of stuff is happening that happened an hour and a half into the original film. It's like, fuck it, let's go full bore. Which I guess is appreciated, especially when you're watching them in a set like this.
Sure.
But it's certainly not as good of a film. It does do stuff that will stick with you and creep you the fuck out, especially the aforementioned incesty parts of it, which are yeah. like, that was fucked up. But one of the biggest problems with 2 is that it sells itself. I mean, it sells itself on the poster. This is the prequel to the Amityville Horror, the house, the people that were in the house before. Despite the fact that in the Amityville Horror, we're told the story of those people.
Yeah.
And it don't go down like this.
Unless
we don't even have the same name.
Unless Amityville 2 ends with one of the characters murdering all the other ones with a shotgun, which it does not end that way, then that is a load of crap.
Well, they're mainly killed with shotguns.
They're mainly killed with
shotguns.
And
that's not even the end. That's the end of the second act. The whole third act is like about like somebody trying to say, oh, well, the evil's not dead and it's not this kid's fault and we got to figure out what to do. And by that point, that's where you kind of lose interest. You're like, okay, let's move on. But you'll be sad you moved on when you get to Amityville 3D, which is an atrocious piece of shit if there ever it was one.
But at least it was in 3D.
This is a blatant cash-in. And the worst part is this transfer. I don't know what's going on with this, but sometimes you see older movie 3D transfers. There's some sort of weird out-of-focus shit going on, the whole thing. Like, they couldn't quite fix it for regular viewing. You know what I'm saying? So it just looks awful. Yeah, all the way through this damn thing, you're like, wow, is this actually a Blu-ray transfer? I suspect that's as good as they could do with the source material, but it looks absolutely fucking awful.
Maybe it was the demon saying, get out of focus.
And this one is supposedly based on the true story of a skeptic who was writing a book about how the Lutzes were full of shit, which, by the way, they were. But,
totally.
Like, you get a good actor like Tony Roberts, who you might know if you ever watched any of Woody Allen's 70s and 80s stuff. He was in, like, all of it. who is the skeptic along with his partner, played by Candy Clark, that have decided that, okay, like, you know, they pull, like, they bust a fake psychic who's doing her stuff in the old Amityville house, and then finds out that the house is for sale and it's dirt fucking cheap because nobody wants to buy it. And he's like, there's no demons in the air. I'm going to buy it. And of course, we all know he's wrong and terrible things are going to happen. And terrible things happen, most namely the rest of this film
in front of you. I have never seen three. I've only seen the first two.
It's not scary. It's not even funny when bad. It's just stupid. There's nothing new here at all. The only thing that you might find entertaining is Lori Loughlin, who was in the show Full House, plays his daughter Susan, and her best friend is Meg Ryan, who you see on screen for maybe a minute. But yeah, three is like a just like, well, I've already gotten this far. I might as well just plunge ahead. I'm kind of startled that they didn't just go ahead and release all 10 of the Amityville horror films that exist, because it can't be that hard
including to get the rights. Amityville Dollhouse.
Yeah, it can't be that hard to get the rights to the rest of them.
No.
I mean, seriously, who drew the line at three? Who's been the bidding war for the 4 through 10?
It's a good question.
And the sad thing is, I probably would have sat and watched them.
Yeah, all of them.
And like be bitching about
it. We would have marathoned the whole thing. It would have been great.
Totally would have. But that being said, I mean, the Amityville Horror is kind of a cultural classic, and it's fun to have them all together in one set like this. It's, you know, Shout Factory doing the type of stuff they do. They're okay video transfers, certainly not the best I've ever seen, but they'll do. And it's one of those, if you've never seen these, you should probably check out at least the first two.
All right. Well, moving on from there, we're going to talk about Family Guy. I guess it's volume 11 because they never really...
Yeah, they don't break them up in seasons.
Because Fox has decided that they don't give a shit about people who still like Family Guy. And I, you know what? I go back and forth on this. I write it off and then I see newer episodes that are funny and then they do shit that... And then Seth MacFarlane does things that's like, haha, I'm just going to fuck with the audience instead of make them laugh. And I'm like, no, that's not cool. Go back to making movies.
To be fair, they've been doing them in volume since the beginning.
They have. No.
I don't, stupid.
Just fix it at this point. Yeah. Just go, you know what? Catch up with the volume and then switch to season.
But the thing I'm talking about with Seth MacFarlane is not the episode arrangement in the box set. It's episodes like, oh, I'm not going to write any jokes. And it's going to be a bottle episode with Stewie and Brian. Or we're going to do this episode about Meg and her, like, why she's the one that's always picked on. So it's like, dude, stop. Just quit. You're not a concept guy.
I like most of the Stewie and Brian go off and do their own thing episodes. I think those are really fun.
I'm talking about the one where they're trapped in a bank vault and there are literally no jokes and they're just like trying to work out.
One of the guys in the bank vault ends up actually being the devil and every time the lights go out, is that what you're talking about?
No. I'm like, you have to see this episode, dude. Okay. It is devoid of humor. I believe the weirdest thing.
I thought we were making a general point.
But the road episodes are the best. Yeah,
references the way they always do, but they're always to like the most serious scenes in movies like Sophie's Choice and Schindler's List, so it's not really funny.
Now, I will say, the collection of episodes within this volume is pretty solid. There's some really good stuff in here from late 2012 on, and I think my favorite episode in this entire bunch is called Farmer Guy. Because Peter decides he wants to be a farmer, but he's terrible at it. But the farm that they buy, they go down to the basement and there's a meth lab. So they become meth dealers instead.
You know, it's believable.
It's fucking hilarious. And yeah, I mean, Road to Vegas is another road episode on here where there's some cool, like, cause they've been doing a lot of stuff lately with time travel, with Suey's time machine. And they mix sort of the time travel episode with a road episode. Mm. So I thought that was pretty cool. Kind of the way they did with like Road to Germany, you know, where they go back in time and end up in Nazi Germany with Mort. But you know, this one is an episode where they're trying to get to Vegas quicker. Oh, I'm sorry. It's not time travel. Excuse me. It's a teleporter. And what they try to teleport themselves to Vegas, but then that ends up going awry, and you see how, and there's like multiple timelines. Because anyway, but yeah, I mean, there's a lot of good episodes in this set. I still don't quite understand how they're breaking these up, where they don't actually like this is the beginning of the season, this is the end of the season. It doesn't make a lot of sense to me. But like I said, if you're a fan of Family Guy, or even if you're one of those people who's right on the fence about it, because I mean, here's when I tend to watch Family Guy is like, as I'm falling asleep and I just want to put something on to kind of lull me to sleep. And then, I'll usually laugh a few times pretty heartily. But I mean, if you're on the fence about it, I think this is a good set to pick up to kind of make that decision one way or the other. Because if you don't like these episodes, Family Guy is just not your show.
And some people it's not.
And it's not. I'm not making any judgments. I'm just saying if you're on the fence and really want to know whether Family Guy is your show, I think these are some of the stronger episodes to go, okay, yes or no. It's a litmus test.
The one thing that always weirds me out is that people who hate Family Guy, it's not enough for them to hate it.
Everyone else has to
convince everyone else they're right, and the other guys are wrong.
Well, it is written by manatees.
Yeah, I sometimes make me think, like, they're like, oh, the humor's so dumb. I'm like, I don't know, man. The only people I know who are that vicious about convincing other people to hate stuff are usually the dumber people. So, I'm not saying you're dumb if you hate it. I'm just saying that's pretty stupid behavior.
We're not saying you're dumb if you hate it or you're dumb if you like it.
Don't try to convince other people that they should love or hate it as well.
Don't be so vicious about it. At least, you know, it's like, hey, I don't like reality television. I think most of it is stupid as hell. But I'm not going to lecture you because you like to watch America's Top Model. I don't give a shit if you like it. If you like it, hey, that's your thing.
My wife actually does kind of like that show.
But there are people who do.
It's kind of funny.
But it's not my thing. I think it's terrible, but what do I care if you really like it or not? I can do a review of it and say, it's awful, don't watch it. But if you say, but I like it, I'm not going to tear into you with the diatribe about why you and the show are stupid.
I'm going to keep this recording of Chris saying this for the next time he tears into me for liking a show.
Well, that's you, Luke. You're different. You're my partner here.
God damn it.
So.
Well,
you're a special case.
What are you going to do?
Special.
Well, yeah, that is, and there's loads of special features, commentaries. There's some fun stuff with Ricky Gervais actually on this, which is interesting because as I go back through this, I don't remember that episode being in this set. It's called Be Careful What You Wish For. Where basically Peter is granted a talking dolphin helps Peter find like a hood ornament, and then that dolphin ends up like calling in the favor by staying with them, and it's voiced by Ricky Gervais, and he's on the special features here, but I don't see that episode. I don't remember that episode being in this set, which is odd. But anyway, that is what that is.
Fair enough.
Anyway, so we're gonna move on from that and talk about Cold War.
Cold War is, you know, guys, anything they send me with a bunch of Asian people in it, I'll watch it. So I love that. That's one of those realms where you still discover the hidden gems that no one else is talking about. Most of the other film critics I even know don't watch this stuff until one has been elevated to the point that you can't miss hearing about
right,
it.
Right.
Which is usually 2 or 3 years sometimes after it's actually come out. So I'm really excited to look through it because you literally don't know what you're going to get. You're like, sometimes they're awful, like the guillotines that we saw, like we both watched half of and went, I don't know what the fuck is going on.
I can't follow this.
And other times they're absolutely brilliant. Cold War falls somewhere in between, but the fault lays more with the lack of understanding the cultural transfer here, because this was one of the biggest films in Hong Kong when it came out in 2012. It swept the film awards. I can't remember the name of the awards, but it swept the major Hong Kong film awards for like best actor, best director, best picture. The Busan International Film Festival, that's what I was thinking of. And this is very much, it's one of those films you're like, someone in Hollywood right now is in a conversation with a producer talking about rewriting this to an American version, and they should, because it's a film that, in the hands of a director, a good American director, who rewrites it so it fits stuff that makes more sense in America, it could be an absolutely top-notch thriller. As it is, it still is a pretty good thriller. I mean, any movie that ends with people shooting high-end fireworks at each other and then being blown to pieces on the top of a skyscraper?
Pretty awesome.
Fucking awesome.
Yeah, that's pretty badass.
Now the story here, it's kind of broken into two halves here, where the first half is about a bunch of cops who right in the beginning get kidnapped by someone along with a van they drive around with, and they've contacted the city for ransom demands. In the midst of all this, there's sort of this power war going on between the pre-existing sort of police commander and the next-up guy who's... And one of the reasons is one of the cops who's been kidnapped is the son of the current commissioner, and he is essentially trying to establish martial law in the city to deal with the situation. So it's kind of about like the lengths the police can go to, even to deal with something that like their own being kidnapped, and the transfer of power that inevitably happens in there. The second half of this film is about an IA investigation, as all fingers point to the new cop, the guy who took over the earlier part, as being involved somehow in this, that this was dirty and the mystery, because we know that something is going on dirty, but we literally don't know who it was that was involved. So it's tracking that trying to figure out who the person was and leading to a pretty spectacular showdown at the end. That being said, there's a lot of this that's not going to make a lot of sense to people who are not from this part of the world. There's a lot of it that's about internal government and affairs of the police force that are going on there that kind of lost me at points, but really great performances throughout this. Aaron Kwok is a terrific leader here as the deputy commissioner of police, Sean Lau, who's really the main character of this. You get, cameos from like Andy Lau, Tony Leung is in this, Gordon Lam. It's a good, Terrence Yin. It's got a great cast for people who love Hong Kong movies, and it's got a, obviously a huge budget. I mean, like, really impressive special effects, car chase sequences, shootouts. It's one of those I'm like, man, I wish Frankenheimer was still alive to make an right? adaptation of this thing, because it would be so up his alley. So yes, I do recommend this, but probably for people who are a little more experienced with Hong Kong movies already, enough so that you're not going to get bored when there's portions that you're like, I don't really understand what they're getting at here. But overall, really great little thriller.
Cool. Well, I have to make two amendments to my earlier review of Family Guy. Apparently, Volume 11 is the first that I've seen that actually does go from the start to the finish of a season.
Wow.
Because I looked at, like, I saw the episodes in here, and then I finally did look up the order of how they actually aired. And sure enough, it's the that exact order. And also, the Ricky Gervais, I stand by this still being a weird thing. The Ricky Gervais episode, the Dolphin one, is in the season prior to this one, which still begs the question, why didn't you do the interview for that set instead of this one? It seems weird to be like, hey, remember that episode last season? Well, now we're going to talk about it
that is
on this
weird.
Set. But anyway, I just wanted to make that clear because I'm sure people are already yelling at me in the comment section. So anywho, we're going to move on to New Girl season 2. I'm really excited about this one because I dug the hell out of this show.
I am so glad you finally got a chance to watch the show, because I watched season 1 very sort of like, all right, we'll give this a few episodes. It doesn't look like it's going to be my kind of thing.
It looked too precious from the advertising. I was like, this is going to be so fucking precious.
Totally charmed by this.
Totally.
Thing. Like, completely sucked me in with its charms. There's so many good things to say about this that even people I know who hate Zooey Deschanel, and I know a lot of people were like, fuck her, I hate her, like, just weirdly vitriolic
about
it.
That's so bizarre to
me.
Yeah,
I don't get that.
This is this weird sort of take on her as the quirky girl where she actually is a complete hot mess. You know, I mean, she's a mess.
Well, she's both sides of that. She's really hot and she's a mess.
As a viewer, us watching her, but her presentation in there is that, yeah, people are kind of put off by her because she's you know, I mean, she's kind of incompetent in some things, and she's klutzy as
and
hell.
She's a little awkward around other people.
Yeah, awkward around other people. She's not great socially. You know, it kind of shows the downside of being that quirky girl like that. But it's followed up with a great cast of people, led by, I think, Jake Johnson, who plays Nick Miller, who's ostensibly the male lead of the show.
Right.
Is really, you might remember that show Numbers, where he was a cop who used, or the assistant to a cop who used math to solve everything, which was a fun little show procedural while it lasted, but he is terrific here as sort of like the old grumpy guy stuck in a young guy's body. There's even an episode in the second season where you see him as a little kid, somebody throws a frisbee on his porch, like, stop throwing your shit in my yard!
Yeah, I thought that was funny.
Max Greenfield plays, you know, the near retarded character of the show.
He is the Barney Stinson of this show.
Schmidt.
He could not be more modeled on Barney Stinson if that's exactly what they were trying to do, which I kind of have a theory that's exactly what they were trying to do.
But maybe even, because Barney has sort of that level, like, he actually seems pretty competent.
Yeah.
Schmidt is incompetent.
Right. Yes, Schmidt is the incompetent version of Barney Stinson. That's absolutely correct.
I mean, we constantly see flashbacks to when he was in high school and college, and they put him in a fat suit, which is hysterical but disturbing, where he was the spaz. The guy that everyone made fun of in school. And now he's like totally trimmed down. Like, he's a good looking guy, dresses in high end clothes. He's a metrosexual in every sense of the word, but he works for a corporation run entirely by really powerful, gorgeous women who all demean him and talk shit about him constantly.
He's the kind of metrosexual who uses hair chutney and pronounces it chutney.
Now, sadly, Winston doesn't seem to get quite as many great moments as the others, who is the black roommate, Token.
No, but when he does have moments,
Lamone Morris,
they're hysterical.
They do some good stuff arcs with his character. No question. I do agree. In fact, he was the character who originally was played by somebody else in just the pilot, and then they replaced that guy and brought this
character. Well, it was a different character because they called him Coach.
Yeah. Well, it was a different character, but it filled the slot.
And then didn't they bring him in as like the coach's brother, and then his brother just stayed? Am I wrong about that? I feel like that was the That was the plot point, but I don't know.
Last up of the regular characters is Cece, who is not one of these roommates who all live together, but she's this gorgeous model of Indian heritage, played by Hannah Simone, who has been Jess, Zooey Deschanel's character, her best friend since they were kids, where one, you know, blossomed from an ugly duckling into a kind of good-looking but incompetent dorky girl, which is Jess, and the other blossomed into, like, oh my god, super hot model chick. And yet they stay friends, and it brings all sorts of tension in the middle of it. But this show manages to be so reliably laugh-out-loud funny several times per episode, but I would still, if I was going to compare it to any other show, I'd probably compare it to Friends.
Yeah, that's not a bad comparison. And I, you know, this is the kind of the opposite situation for me as the Mindy Project, where it's like, I really like the writing of the Mindy Project. I really like the dialogue, but the situations don't really, I feel like they're a little too contrived. This one feels very organic and weird. Almost like if you made Portlandia, like, cutesy. Like,
yeah, kind of.
Some of, like, these
had
weird
one long story.
Yeah, and in some of these weird situations they get into. And yet still, the dialogue is not quite as strong as it is in the Mindy Project, but you still get a lot of that creating their own sort of lingo and, like, the witty repartee. And of course, Zooey Deschanel is charming to the max. Like, it's impossible not to fall in love with this girl.
Oh, I agree. I don't understand the hate for her.
I assume it was people that paid to see The Happening. Yeah, it's the only thing I can guess.
Maybe so, because I'd like watch her in 500 Days of Summer, and I'm like, she's amazing. And people are like, are you kidding me? She's such a bitch in that movie. I'm like, it's called being a good actress.
She's playing a character who's a bitch.
You're not allowed to hate the actress because you didn't like the character, dumbass.
Don't hate the player, hate the role. Yeah. I've been telling you all that for years.
But season two continues very much the
Schmidt
same.
Out.
Two continues very much the same sort of beats that the first season had. It's more the same stuff that you loved in the first season. If you saw that, with little weird little arcs going on in between here, including some stuff. I only got halfway through this before I ran out of time.
Well, one of the big things I will tell you that happens probably just past the halfway point is that they really start playing up the sexual tension between Nick and Jess. And the way that goes is sort of unlike anything I've seen in, because I mean, a lot of comedies, a lot of sitcoms do the will they, won't they. And the way they do it is a little bit different, and I like it quite a bit.
Well, that's kind of the one of the big second season arcs, as is some of the new relationships some of those characters get in. Mm-hmm. The big first season, or not second season arcs, second half arcs. The first half of this is dominated by the fact that Jess, right off the bat, loses her teaching job and is slowly turning more and more into an Austinite, basically.
Crazy cat.
Yeah, exactly. And that's everyone funny. Else going crazy while she's also going crazy. And it's very entertaining. I had a lot of fun with this once again. I look forward to even continuing on with this show.
Yeah.
My hope is that Schmidt is going to get fat again. That's
yeah. What I'm looking for. No, that would be awesome.
I think that would be the best thing they could do. I mean, fuck it. They did it on Mad Men. Screw it. Let's do it.
And I want to pour a little out. I want to pour a little out for Dennis Farina, who appears in two episodes. And these episodes aired just months before he passed away. So
yeah.
Dennis Farina, we miss you, buddy.
Yeah,
buddy.
Dude,
as if
the
we were.
The floor is wet now. What the fuck?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'll clean that up. My bad. Well, that brings us to our last title of the show, which will also be our
giveaway.
And it's $100 bills. No, 100 Bloody Acres.
Not 99 Bloody Acres. That movie sucked.
I didn't see the first 99. Am I going to be confused?
No. 99 Bloody Acres floating in the summer sky. You don't remember that?
No.
No.
No, I'm young.
This is a 2000... Yes, you are. This is a 2012 Australian comedy horror film. So, yes, I know. You're like, oh, God. After talking about Dead Before Dawn, you're a little standoffish about comedy horror at this point. And I can't blame you. Most comedy horror is horrible. They should just call them comedy horribles.
Comedy horrible.
Makes more sense. This, but then again, you've got This Is the End, which we started with, which is absolutely one of the best ever comedy horror.
True story.
This falls somewhere in between the two.
Okay.
A lot of people really like this movie on its festival run, and it's not surprising. This is the very definition of a festival movie, meant to be seen in front of a midnight, half-drunk audience of people cheering each other on. And it's not, like I said, for that, I wish I had seen it that way. I really, really wish I had seen it that way, because I think I would have enjoyed it a little more than I ended up doing. Some of the humor seems a little forced, and it has that problem where you don't really want the main characters to survive because they're really unlikable and kind of douchey.
Sure.
But the story here follows some teenagers that are, we find out right from the start, the one girl in their group who is indeed super, super fucking hot. Lindsay, I believe is her name. Is that right? Yeah, Lindsay, played by Angus Sand. That can't be right. No, I'm sorry. Sophie, played by Anna McGann, super hot redhead chick. We find out that one guy she's been dating for a long time, and she's fucking his best friend at the same time. We find that out right from the get-go. So already you're like, here we go. I already don't like two of these characters. But they're trying to get to a big music festival. They managed to flag down basically this guy in a truck who deals with blood and bone organic fertilizer, where they basically take roadkill and mutilate it down to organic fertilizer for people who live locally there. We've seen him in the beginning of the film stop by a car accident, drag the guy's dead body out of the car and throw it into the back of his truck, saying, well, hell, this is just roadkill, right? Problem is, he has the hots for the redhead right off the bat and ends up, even though it's a really stupid idea, saying, yeah, I'll give y'all a ride. The boys can ride in the back, because he's kind of hidden the body under some fertilizer. Well, of course, the body pops up. The boys freak out. He realizes, okay, I can't just give him a ride to the party. Now they're going to be more meat. Takes him back to the mulching farm with his big Gunnar Hansen-looking brother. and it turns into a series of them getting away, them getting caught again, you know, that sort of thing, with a really irritating plot in there where basically it's revealed in the middle of all this that the girl is cheating on the other guy, and despite the fact their lives are in absolute, like, Texas Chainsaw Massacre levels of danger, he wants to talk about it.
You gotta be shitting.
You know, he wants, doesn't like, want maybe, to go to, let's talk about
maybe
this.
You haven't noticed, but we apparently are some either in the Texas Chainsaw Massacre or the Corpse Grinders. Can we deal with this later?
Now, one of the things that really does work here is the other guy, the guy who was cheating with the girl, took acid right before all this started, and he gets away and is trying to escape, and, you know, there's a point with the road forks, and one way is clearly the way to go, and the other has a sign saying, Fairy Tale Land, which is like a closed down amusement park, like, you know, with like a bunch of nursery rhyme stuff.
Oh, that's where I would go.
Guess where he goes. There's a funny sequence where he's being chased through this, but he's like fucking around with all the exhibits and stuff, like making out with the Snow White animatronic mannequin and stuff. And you're like, okay, that's actually pretty cute. And there are cute moments all the way through this, and there's some really, really gory stuff here too. Like, really pretty impressive,
nice.
Like all practical gore effects in here. But ultimately, like I said, I just didn't give a fuck about the people who were in it at all. And it does have one of those endings that you're not going to see coming, the way this ends up working out with the way the characters all relate with each other towards the end. It has a very strange character-based twist. It's probably worth seeing it for alone, and one of the reasons it's getting as much press as it is. But yeah, it's a good comedy horror. I didn't think it was a great one, but don't listen to me, because lots of audiences disagree with me who absolutely loved this film. So,
well, this is our giveaway, and appropriate since it is October and we're giving away yet another horror release. But as you know, we've moved away from a fastest finger who can see what the quickest type of giveaway. We moved into something a little bit more creative. So what we're going to do is we're going to give you a, I guess you could call it a creative writing prompt. And only of about a paragraph. And basically, you'll give us your response, and we'll pick our favorite, and that person will win a DVD copy of 100 Bloody Acres. Chris, what in the world should be the topic, the creative writing prompt here for winning 100 Bloody Acres on DVD?
Well, how about you're one of the guys who runs some sort of farm, whether it's Motel Hell or Texas Chainsaw Massacre or whatever like that, and a bunch of teenagers show up and ruin your day, so you gotta kill them. Tell us about all the different ways you kill each one of the teenagers.
Or how about this? How about you tell us what you turn them into? How about you tell us what you manufacture them into, and
yes, I like that better. It seems like it will involve less penises.
Yeah, I don't want, like, everybody sociopathic.
We have really, really demented fans.
That's
sometimes.
True, and I love them for it.
I love them, yeah. That's
but yeah, so let's try and make it funny by you telling us exactly what you would manufacture the pile of dead teenagers into.
And the two winners, the two best ones that we pick out, will win a DVD of 100 Bloody Acres.
Hey, we have two copies to give away, so there is that. Well, guys, that brings us to the end of the show. Thank you so much for listening. I want to remind you once again that you can buy any of the items we talk about by clicking on our links right here on the page. Or if you want to buy anything from Amazon, if you get there from our links, you're actually supporting the site, and we really appreciate that. And don't forget to go over to the Podcast Awards. We'll put the link up again and vote for all of your favorite One of Us shows so that we can get on the ballot, as it were.
That would be terrific.
That would be great.
I appreciate it.
You can also go over to Facebook, facebook.com/digitalnoise.oneofus.
I believe.
Yes, man. We should write that down. We really should. Or you can follow the site proper, facebook.com/oneofusnet, or you can follow the show on Twitter at DigiNoisecast. That's D-I-G-I Noisecast. Follow us individually. I'm at BryGuy Salisbury.
I'm at Chris Cox Critic.
At LD Mullen.
And yeah, until next time, we want to remind you that the things that go bump in the night should really be checked out by a doctor.